everyone. Welcome to an action-packed Back to the Future edition of ARG Presents. I'm your good buddy, Amigo Aaron, joined by a man who's an 8-bit guy living in a 16-bit world. I give you the Brent.
No, I'm way more than 8 bits, Aaron. Way more.
How many bits do you think you are, exactly?
I take up enough space to be bigger than 18-bit.
You're 8-bit. Trust me, if anyone is a chunky pixel, it's you, my friend. So, if you were here last week, we spun the wheel, we made the deal, the crazy deal, Brent. And this week, we're going to be playing, bam, modern 8-bit games. Modern 8-bit games, Brent. Explain to the folks what that means exactly.
This is more of a reinvention of the past. We're taking a look at people who have taken old technologies from the 8-bit era and have made new games and new applications for them. And it's kind of amazing. I mean, it's not kind of amazing. It's incredibly amazing what these people can do with the older technologies, your Amstrads, your C64s, your NESs, and the games that they are able to use new techniques and new way of thinking to pull more out of the hardware than ever thought possible. It's fun to not only, I mean, the games themselves are fun, there's no question about that, but to see what they are able to do is mind-blowing. It really is.
Yeah. It's funny, new games, I guess the system leading the charge into this new stuff in the 8-bit era is the C64, which has had a huge influx of new games made for it in the past few years. It's really taken off, Brent. And I'll call your attention to some of the Sarah Jane Avery stuff, who she's been a big player. It's funny because I hear a lot about her shooters, and I've only just vaguely played a couple. The one that I played is called Soul Force, very popular game. But the C64 seems to have a lot of new titles coming out from it all the time. But it's not the only one. And I'll refer you to a game we actually put on the show a while back, which was the Amstrad edition of Pinball Dreams, which was a redone game from the glory days of the Amiga brought over to the Amstrad. And the Amstrad actually is becoming sort of a player in the remake world, modern 8-bit games. I think that one is one to keep your eye on because I don't think the Amstrad was ever fully utilized in its glory days. And I think that's the key to this surge. You mentioned it yourself. Making games that take advantage of these 8-bit systems in a way that they weren't taking advantage of before because people either didn't know how to do it or people were under such a time crunch that they couldn't do anything to make the games better, to make the games look more interesting. And now that you've got basically home coders who have all the time in the world to devote to these projects, they've got all the information in the world to program these particular games, and you get a different, more beautiful, more intense game.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot more to do with shared knowledge than anything else, because I don't think it's a time factor. I think there are plenty of games that back in the day took their time and produced incredible for the time results. I think it is a shared technology factor where you've got all these people taking what they knew from the past and new people coming on the scene with a new perspective, dabbling their bits in there. And then you take all that knowledge and you put it online for anyone to go and see. I think that's the big difference in all this. I think it's a shared technology issue.
I'll give you that. You know, aside from the C64, like I said, had a big resurgence. By the way, I want to also call out a game that's just basically taking an old game that wasn't for the system and porting over, which is the Super Mario or the Mario Brothers for the C64. I don't know if you've seen it. It's unbelievable how similar it is to the NES version. So that's something else you're going to see a lot of are ports to systems that never got those ports, which is a lot of fun. Even the Amiga is getting some action, a 16-bit machine that is getting some new stuff made, some new work done on it. We just covered a game on the Amigos just this past episode that involved a newer game from 2018 called Alcocopter. So the Amiga is starting to get a lot more action than it was as well. It's a pretty exciting time. This is the result of having so many hobbyists that are still playing these old machines that are getting into them. And I think we're going to see a lot of surprises coming in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope to see this continue. And as you said, as it goes down the line, when you hit the 16-bit systems and even the 32-bit systems and the 64-bit systems, I would like to see what capable hands can do on, say, like the Saturn, something that was incredibly hard to program for back in the day. If that's something that can really push to new heights with new programming technologies and new shared experiences to kind of push that along. Another system I'd love to see new stuff for is the N64. I think that it had a lot of potential that was never truly tapped.
It was sort of held back by its media, among
exactly
other things. Yeah,
exactly. And you can negate that now. You know, you don't have to have it on a cart. I think another system I'd love to see what they can push is the Game Boy Advance. Although I think that for the time, that technology really got pushed to its extremes. Some of the Street Fighter games for that, the animations and stuff were astounding. But it makes me wonder if there's more out there. There's more they can get out of it.
If we're going to go past the 8 and 16-bit worlds to a certain degree, there are plenty of systems that I don't think had their potential even remotely touched. And I'll just mention a couple real quick. The first one that pops into my head is the Atari Jaguar, which, as we covered before, they stuck a 68,000 chip in there for some mundane baloney, and that became the de facto chip that was used due to the ease of porting stuff. And they never really got to use, much like the Amstrad, it was sort of a victim of everything getting ported to it to the easiest way possible, as opposed to taking advantage of what it actually could do. I would like to see more action on the 3DO. I don't think that system was fully fleshed out either. I think that would be a good one to get some action on. And I will close by saying it's been interesting to see the work that's also been done on sort of the granddaddy of them all, which is the old Atari 2600, the Atari VCS. David Crane and the boys, Gary Kitchen, just released, just a couple weeks ago, they released a game called Circus Convoy for the Atari VCS. And this game looks great. It's sort of the spiritual successor to Pitfall. And it's an awesome looking game. You know, it ain't cheap, brother, but it looks great. So it's nice to see that there's plenty of room to work on these old machines. I mean, heck, we just looked at the Bally Astrocade last week, and I could see tons of potential in the Bally that probably wasn't tapped in its day. And it must have a homebrew scene, because we know there are literally six times as many games out for it as were originally released. So that's another one I think it would be neat to fiddle around with. Plenty of good options there. And when we decided to undertake this challenge, there was no shortage of great titles to go after. In fact, I took suggestions to come up with one, and I'll lead the dance this week, Brent, with mine. And I got tons of great suggestions, but there was one that was suggested. This is suggested by our good buddy Rushi, and it's a game I wanted to take a look at strictly because of the subject matter. I'd heard a lot about it. I heard our buddies on Pixel Gaiden talk about it and our good buddy Doug. And so I want to dig into it. That game is the Shadow Over Hawksmill. Shadow Over Hawksmill, Brent, released in 2020, published by Cytronic, which Cytronic seems to be one of the king dongs of publishing these modern releases. This was coded by a fellow named Stuart Collier, and game design graphics by Trevor Story, music by Saul Cross. And this also was available in a full package, complete with, you can even get this on cartridge, Brent. And it's a beautiful cartridge. The artwork on the packaging was done by Trevor Story as well. And this thing, I'll get into what it had in it, in the box, but it was ludicrous. This thing took Felix to an exciting new level, Brent. So what attracted me to this game? Well, if you know me at all, you'll know that I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft, who was an American writer in the early 1900s. He died young. He only lived to be 46, Brent. He was born in 1890. So he was right there at the turn of the century. And he was a guy that lived in New England. He really, he died effectively penniless in his day. But since his death, his writing has been heralded. And, of course, he's been endlessly ripped off and copied. If you've ever heard of the Necronomicon or Cthulhu or Shadow over Innsmouth or any of a million different things that he created, those were all done by him. The Necronomicon was just featured, a book that's featured in his writing. In fact, he wrote all kinds of stories about sacred texts that could drive a man mad, that sort of thing. And his stuff was real interesting. He delved a lot into the lands of insanity. That's because he had insanity in his immediate family, and including dipping his toe in the insanity pool himself, which probably would explain some of his more weird writing. He also was a prolific letter writer. He wrote over 100,000 letters in his life to all these different artists and stuff. He was well known and well regarded by other writers, but not by the readers, unfortunately. And he did most of his work in like pulp magazines of the day, you know, just writing stories for them. So he's an interesting character. And it's funny, even in my lifetime, I knew about him when I was very, very young, and he was popular in a very small geek circle that has expanded exponentially since I've been around. So he's riding high right now. And this game clearly was inspired by some of his work. He has a story I mentioned called The Shadow Over Innsmouth, and this is The Shadow Over Hawksmill. So you can see what they did there. So when this game boots up, I should mention I did pay for this game, whenever I bought it. I'll talk about the experience of doing that here in a minute, because it's been touched upon in other places. So when you boot this game up, you've got the choice of going to like a demo section or just starting the game. And if just for a quick, I don't know if you looked at the demo side of this, but basically if you click on the music player, a kind of a cool looking music player comes up, and it just plays a bunch of sort of like Sid tracks, you know, stuff from that. For the C64 is great at playing music, and these are some good tracks. They included a bunch of tracks you can listen to, sort of like jukebox style. And the player is cool looking too. It's sort of in the style of the game. It has nothing to do with the game, but it's still kind of neat. That you could play it. So that kind of stuck that in there. And then you get into the story proper with an interesting opening that sees you sort of being narrated, the story being narrated by a fellow who's sitting at a desk writing in this shadowy area with a stack of tomes beside him. This is your classic Lovecraft guy. You know, he's sitting there with an oil lamp, and his writings are scrolled underneath the picture as you watch the video. Now, right out of the gate, you know this game is going to be sharp because this scene is very well rendered of this guy sitting at this desk writing this stuff down, and it sets the tone for the game.
Although he is sitting on the wrong side of the desk.
I knew you were going to say that. So, listen, but everyone knows that these turn of the century desks were reversed. It's all everyone knows that. Maybe this could be a symptom of his madness.
Also there you go.
So the story behind this is, and this is straight from the game, strange things have been happening in the small town of Hawksmill, located in the northeast of England. The entire population vanished overnight. You suspect dark forces may be responsible, having spent many years studying the pages of the great tome of all things evil, the Necronomicon. Which you shouldn't study that, by the way. Could this event be what was foretold in the dark and ancient manuscripts? You're determined to find out who is responsible for the shadow over Hawksmill. There you go. So that's the premise of this. The whole town's been abducted. That's hardcore.
Well, you don't know they're abducted at this point. You just know that they're gone.
Well, they're gone, and you suspect dark forces. Do the math. This is an H.P. Lovecraft-inspired game. I would have just assumed they'd all been killed.
Yeah.
Violently killed. But there you go. Or they could be in on it. If you've ever read The Shadow of Innsmouth, the whole town worshipped Cthulhu. So you're pretty much boned in that one.
That's the very first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're all fish people.
Yeah. So there's a lot of fish people in there. So what do you get in this game? Well, the box spells out a lot of the of what you're going to look at here, and I just to go over a little bit. this is a flip screen game. Basically, when you start playing this, let's get to a part here where you actually run around. You're going to go screen to screen, and it's your classic flip screen thing. I will say, right out of the gate, you notice that the graphics in this are outstanding. Well done. They're still in the C64 style, as Boat would say. You've got a lot of browns and grays, but this is a Lovecraft-inspired story. And believe it or not, the C64 palette perfectly matches Perfect. Up what you would expect from a game like this. Very stylized graphics and they're functional as well. As you go through the game, it's just a flip screen game, but the action takes place quite nicely. There's a good fluidity to it. According to the specs of the game contains over 60 screens to explore. I read it was close to 70, so very close. It also has multiple weaponry, which we'll get into. There are lots of traps and puzzles. That's the truth. You've got it's PAL and NTSC compatible, and it also works with the C64 Mini and Maxi. So you've got that going for you if that's your way to play it. I bought this from the website over at Cytronic, and I watched Doug's review of this game last year, and Doug said he had all kinds of trouble buying the game. It was real creepy, the interface. I guess they fixed it because it took me like 2 seconds, and it was not creepy at all. So I don't know if he got there early. I don't know what the problem is. Doug's pretty thorough, but I had zero problems buying this, and we'll get into what it costs and the different ways you can pick this up in a little bit. So what is this game? Well, you play the detective that's going after this mystery, and when you start the game, you're basically running through town. In this game, it reminded me very much of an old NES game.
Yeah, is a Metroidvania.
Okay, there you
That's
go.
That's the genre that it.
Listen,
this is
I didn't want to steal the patent pending name of that. I hear that all the time on Pixel Gating, but I guess that's what this is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
This is a game where you're going to go back and forth to accomplish certain goals. There's a lot of exploration in this. And there's a lot of searching. And searching's pretty simple. You just go over what you want to search. You pull down, and if there's something there, you'll find it. You'll often find keys or golden hammers or even human heads occasionally, or ammo. And once you do that, if it's something you can add to your inventory, it will add to your inventory. Your inventory's listed at the bottom, and they've come up with a pretty good system. It's not the first time I've seen this sort of system. If you hold down on your joystick and hit your button, you'll rifle through your inventory until you get to what you want, and then that's going to be what you've got in your hand. The downside, you could go into combat with a key in your hand or a human head. You're boned. So don't do that, and then it can happen. There are also short keyboard shortcuts as well. I never used them, but you can.
Yeah, the F key cycle through your stuff.
I did not have too much trouble cycling through my inventory, but occasionally it will hose you. And we'll get to that in a minute. So the game, like I said, has you running through. A lot of the game takes place underground, but you start on the above ground to begin with. And you're looking for stuff like keys to access these various buildings. And when you get in there, there are stuff you can do in them. Sometimes there's stuff you can do under them. And so the game gets into a lot of exploration of caves and stuff. There are the usual tropes in here. One of the things you're going to see early and often are bats. They're everywhere. They respawn. The enemies in this respawn. And they are a perpetual pain in the butt. And I will say right out of the gate, I'm going to level a criticism here. Too much bats. Way too much bats. Non-stop. They never stopped. And it got real old. I hate games that just set on the bat. And this game, there are bats everywhere. And I mean lots of them.
Well, you know why, right?
I guess to keep things moving would be my guess.
I think something you can do with this game is if you hold the action button, if you have a gun, you shoot.
Yeah.
If you hold that down, you can aim up or down with your gun. And
it's a good system, but except for like waste ammo.
It is, but I think that the bats are multi-level. So it encourages you to do that kind of gameplay. And I think that is in part, I could be completely wrong, right? But I think in part it is them allowing you to use that functionality of the shooting and they do go a little overboard with it.
A little?
There's almost a bat in every scene.
At least one.
And typically, yeah, they're hidden in shadows, so you can't see them until you get close, and then they fly down. So the bats are also a light jump scare mechanic.
Very light.
Go ahead, keep on going. I will talk about my feelings at the end.
Let's talk about, I want to finish up with the basics of the game. So your guy moves around. He's got the ability to climb up ledges. He's got the ability to jump. He doesn't take fall damage. He can fall pretty much as far as you want. He can climb over stuff. He can pull himself up. He's sort of like Prince of Persia Light. You know what I'm saying? He's got a lot of the same dynamic abilities, athleticism as the Prince.
Yeah.
Except this guy's packing heat, brother. And as Britt as Britt mentioned, the ability to move the target up, the gun up and down is neat. But to do it, you have to hold the button down, which means you're going to be perpetually shooting. And in this game, when you run out of ammo, you're boned.
Yeah.
I mean, you're gonna really take a lot of damage. You've got a damage meter at the lower left-hand part of the screen. I think you got 10 hearts in there. When you run out of hearts, you're dead. You'll occasionally pick up apples. When you eat an apple, it replenishes your health completely.
Yeah.
And so this is one of those games where you have to search all the time. If you don't, you can't miss anything. On top of that, you're going to find things along the way that are required to complete certain puzzles. Now, I don't know. I found this game very difficult. I'll be honest with you. These games are not what I would call my bag, but I did my best in this game. But I got past certain puzzles. But one of the first puzzles, just as an example, you will come across a rock hammer. All right, you need the rock hammer to get. And once you get past the first set of caves, to go back up on the surface to get past this second area. That it will open up a second set of caves, right? There are puzzles much more diabolical than this in here. There's a lot of stuff where you have to put stuff in other stuff to make it work, including stuff like levers and like certain types of idols have to go in certain spots to open up doors. The game mentions that you can get multiple weapons. That's true. Or right out of the gate, you've got a pistol. You could also get a shotgun. And I also saw a machine gun in there. Machine gun's very important. Later on in the game, because you're going to be fighting things that are real nasty, and basically the other guns aren't going to get you out of there because they run back and forth real quick, and there's nothing you can do about it. They just smoke you. The game, I want to give a prop to the lighting on the rain and storm effects. It's awesome. The rain sounds awesome, and it looks awesome. All those effects are real good. The cave area is not as attractive as the above ground area, but I mean, it's a cave. There's not a whole lot you can do about that, but they do have the various cliches strewn around. You'll come across tomes with evil sayings written on them and chests and that sort of stuff. There's all kinds of torches hanging off the wall. Whenever you fight enemies, they are always shrouded in dark. So when you see bats, the bats are just like the shadows of the bat. You don't actually see any detail in the bat, and that holds true for all the other stuff you fight. You come across a bunch of crazy critters in this game that are otherworldly. Often it's in your best interest just to either jump over them or to try to avoid them entirely. And sometimes when you have no bullets, you just have to kind of run through them, you know, and they'll just take some damage off of your health. I think the controls are fine. I didn't have too much trouble jumping around, but the stuff that attacks you just rushes you. And it's often real fast. And this game gets hard real quick once you get past that second wall. And it's real difficult for me. The puzzle elements were beyond me. I'll be honest with you. I watched a walkthrough of this after I've tried playing it, and I would never have guessed half the stuff that they had in here. There's many, many puzzles that involve taking a lever and sticking it in the wall and activating stuff, and you have to really be paying attention to see the little couple pixels required to know where to put the lever. How far did you get in this thing, the Brent?
Well, I don't know really how you can judge how far you get since it's a Castlevania or a Metroidvania game. Obviously, using the rock hammer to knock down the bigger tunnel is the first real goal and checkpoint of the game.
Yeah.
Because that opens up so much stuff. First off, I think I need to say that the game for the C64 is mind-blowingly amazing.
Yeah. It looks, this could appear on the NES and no one would have said anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
This absolutely, without question, could have been a Nintendo game, and everyone would have been like, yeah, this is a pretty cool Nintendo game.
Yeah.
Now, its length is not Nintendo length. That's not to say it's short, but it's also not vast. I mean, when people are used to playing Castlevania or Metroid and those types of games, it doesn't come close to that. I believe you said earlier, there's about 70 screens.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's a lot, but it's not, you know, triple digits. The controls in this are good.
The guy controls are great. I think the gun controls are innovative, but that doesn't mean that the gun controls are particularly accurate.
Well, I think the biggest problem is, at least for me, was you're working with one button, and yes, there are keyboard controls, especially for cycling your inventory. I believe
Eating an apple.
F7 was eat an apple, yeah. Right. The biggest problem, though, is, and it's not clunky. Like, the guy grabs on the ledges. That kind of crap's all automatic.
Yeah.
Or part of the jump, I should say. So all that feels good. You do a lot of backtracking, which is standard for these types of games. My biggest issue with the whole thing was searching. And I just wish, because literally there's just items everywhere. There's boxes and vases and chests.
Great.
And they're all, you don't run into them or jump on top of them. They're just pushed in the background. So when you go over to them, you pull down and that searches that item. But there's no signifying that you've searched it, or if it's empty or if it has something into it. So if you miss something, and that's where you find everything in the game. It's not like you kill a boss and then get an item, or open this room and then get an item. It's all about searching these background items for things that you need to advance.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's really bad is if you think that you've searched everything, but you've actually missed a component to open the next door, you are left to go all the way back through and search everything again.
Yeah.
And
I read of a lot of people complaining about that.
That's a grind. I mean, I don't know how they could do it outside of maybe after you search it, have it disappear.
Well,
you know,
there's the element of searching where you, like Zelda or some of these other games, where once you search something, the box blows up. That would probably help. That way you could, I would like to have seen that as well. I'll admit that. Because you go over the screens over and over. And so I kept searching stuff over and over just in case.
Right.
But that can become a drag. I agree.
Now, the
one
nice thing about the search aspect is when you search, it doesn't stop the action.
Yeah.
You hit down. If you pick something up, it just scrolls it at the bottom what you got, and you keep absolutely moving. So it's not like every time you search, it stops the game and says like, oh, you have opened a box. No. So that aspect of it, huge thumbs up, because a lot of games would have done that. Also, when you pick up some things, it will tell you a golden claw, right?
Right.
Okay, I've picked up a golden claw. What is that? What do I use it for?
Well, that's the
But that's
the
not
game.
A puzzle. That's not a puzzle. That's giving me words, right? And it's not showing the item. If you equip the item, you can use it, but all using it does is your guy holds out his hand. There's no way to inspect the item to have any idea what it is. And it turns out, like, golden claw, everything's a key. Everything is a part of a key. Some things have several keys that it has to take. You know, it might take four golden claws to open a door. But when you're first starting out, and I didn't realize this until I looked it up. Like stuff like Rock Hammer or Iron Bar, those things make sense because you have some idea of what their function is. But stuff like Golden Claw something cross, those mean nothing. Those are just words. And you find out later that they're used to open doors. Yeah. So that aspect of it, I was on.
If you had squares at the bottom, like I've seen on some games, that just sort of showed a graphical representation of what you're holding, would that have done it for you?
That would have helped. Stick? Because yeah. the like, you put stuff into a door facing, right? If the item was square and the hole was square, I would at least have an idea that that's where that needs to go.
I see. This game doesn't have a lot of real estate to spare that they put that sort of
thing. Oh, I know. Yeah. I understand the limitations. Like, yeah. Human head, there are vaguely, and I mean vaguely, shaped torsos that you attach the human head on. I don't have a problem with. But when things are nondescript in your inventory and you're trying to figure out what they do, it's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Another aspect, and this didn't come up so much for me as I was looking at it. Guns, your gun upgrades, you go from pistol to shotgun to machine gun.
Right.
It all shares the same ammo. So once you get the shotgun, there's, not that I could see at least, absolutely any reason to ever go back to your pistol. It would have been kind of neat to have seen some enemy weak to one thing and then strong gets the other thing.
I didn't think the ammo was shared. Is it shared? Okay. Yeah.
And then, and you can get upgrades to hold more ammo, which all that's of course cool. And, you know, some of the items will give you temporary invincibility to allow you to do other aspects. So, you know, that's fine. All that's good. The game, and another thing, I'm not killing the game. The game is incredible. There are just aspects that I wish they would have tweaked a little bit that I think were within the realm of possibility that would have made the game better. But the game's incredible. Anyone with any interest in this type of game, and if you're a C64 fan or you fit either of those categories, has to check this out because it's incredible. It's incredible. The way they use the shadows to just give rough outlines of enemies.
Yeah.
It plays so well for a game like this.
It's very Lovecraftian as well.
And the sound is good too.
Oh yeah.
I wasn't blown away, but it was good. It wasn't distracting.
Yeah. Just to kick into what he said, I mean, when you're some of the stuff is real obvious, like colored keys working color, the same color door. I mean, that's pretty simple.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you do get some stuff where you're just like, what in the God's name? What about this crystal glass eye or whatever? You don't know what to do with this stuff. Of course, that's where being clever comes in.
Well, the glass eye part, and I didn't get this far, but I watched a walkthrough eventually. At least the glass eye is actually part of a puzzle.
Right.
I mean, you read some of the tombs and text and have an idea of how that works.
I guess what I'm saying is you're going to get stuff that doesn't make any sense, but it may or may not make sense later on. It's basically the way I look at it. One of the things that did irritate me is when you're above ground or in certain underground areas is when you get attacked by the bats, you can't see them because they blend into the night. And that makes them difficult. The bats, like I said, were the bane of my existence, as they often are. This game has two endings. The good ending and the not so good ending. To get the good ending, you have to collect 10 statues, and you also have to, of course, finish the end boss. You have to basically get everything. Once you collect all the statues, apparently you're giving unlimited ammo, which would help when you fight the last couple bosses. There is a big old boss battle at the end of this game, which I'm not going to spoil here, but it's crazy time at the end. And at the end of this game, there's even like an outro where it shows the villagers going home and stuff. It's pretty nice. I would never see it because there's a 0% chance I could ever get to the end of this game. It was it was just too freaking hard for yours truly. But I mean, some people, I know I was reading when this game was released, I was looking at the thread on one of the C64 webpages where the author posted, and people were beating this like lickety split. So clearly, it was not beyond a lot of people who ran through it with basically no trouble. I wanted to mention a couple of things real quick. This game was actually not the first game that used this actual engine, Brent. This game actually uses an engine that was developed for a game called Rocky Memphis Legend of Atlantis, which I'd heard good things about. That's another one I'd heard of. Same group apparently did it. It might be worth checking out. It's thought of, and a lot of people think of it as even better than this. So I didn't check it out. I thought we'd save that one in case we ever came back around this way, but it is one worth looking into. I want to talk real quick about the crazy options that you had for this game. This game you could get in multiple ways. Now, I just got the cheapo version where you basically download the information. However, this game had multiple options. Now, these are gone now, but if you'd wanted to back in the day, they had a C64 Collector's Edition of the disc that came with so many feelies. You got to describe these because that was so wacky. I've never seen a game that came with so much stuff. It came with keychains. It came with freaking stickers. It came with every sort of wacky thing you could think of in a box. And it was selling for like 40 pounds, so about 55 bucks. But that one's gone. But however, you can still get some of the other varieties of this if it's your cup of tea. You can get there's the C64 Premium Plus Disc Edition, 15 bucks. There's the Budget Disc Edition for 8 bucks. And then you can get the Tape Editions as well, Brent, which I thought was kind of a neat option. So you can get this on everything from cartridge all the way up to tape. So that's handy. And I wonder how many people bought this on tape, but I'm wagering more than a few did. So there you go. I got some reviews on this, believe it or not, Brent. I was surprised that I actually had enough luck to find them. My64 gave this 4 out of 5. I mentioned that Tenmark, our buddy Doug, had reviewed this. Tenmark gave this, and this is a quote, incredibly high recommendation. So there you go. Doug liked it, although, like I said, Doug hated the ordering process. Retro Video Gamer gave this a 9 out of 10. We also got some Discord action on this. In fact, it was from the fellow that recommended it, the Rooster. Rushi writes, Icon 64 rarely disappoints. I loved Legend of Atlantis, and I couldn't wait to see what they did with the spiritual successor that leaned more into the Lovecraft rather than the classic pulp adventure stories. The increased emphasis on survival horror and action took a bit to get used to, but I liked how they balanced the enemy respawning, paced out the weapon distribution through the adventure, and smartly placed the ammo refill points. Early on, you learn how to look for telltale signs of enemies blending in the background, discovering the relative ineffectiveness of your starting weapon, and learn the value of running away from stronger enemies until you get better gear. Make sure you're sitting nice and close to the screen and moving carefully to increase your chances of seeing those traps. The puzzles are a lot easier to solve than in the Legend of Atlantis. That's scary to think about. But I don't think it's possible to beat the last boss without the machine gun, which is something that would have been great to know beforehand. All in all, I've played through this game a bunch of times over the last year, and while I don't know if I can definitively say I liked it more than Legend of Atlantis, I can absolutely say that it's a terrific romp, well worth checking out. Disclaimer, I'm not very unbiased. I have this game on itch.io, on disc, in the collector's edition, and on cart. So, he's got this game. He's got this game in multiple ways.
Well, it's good. It's good.
There you go. So, overall, I enjoyed it. Would I go back to it? Probably not, just because I sucked at it. But I do understand the effort and the gameplay in it. It's probably the gameplay that had passed me by years ago. I was never good at these games on the NES either, as you know. But there is a certain sect of people that are going to be all over this. And this topped many game independent game award winners that was released last year. Definitely worth checking out, the Shadow Over Hawksmill. Brent. So that was the Shadow Over Hawksmill. Now, Brent, you went in an entirely different direction. You want to talk about what you're playing this week?
I have pulled up The Abduction of Oscar Z. And this is actually a free game. It was part of the CPC Retro Dev contest, and it was a contest winner, in fact. And this was made by a group called Dreamin' Bits. The contest that this was entered into had some incredible restrictions, and it actually, I think, makes the game even more impressive when you know what they were up against. The games produced had to first run off of a base Amstrad 464. No memory expansions, no extra bells or whistles. Bam, there it is. It also had to completely load one time for the actual game parts. No, you know, going back and pulling more information, more information. It had to fit in 64K of memory. So they were working with very limited space. And of course, it, you know, all that shoved together to produce this title is absolutely mind-blowing.
That's astounding. I'm hearing this for the first time, having already played it, and I'm baffled at the abilities of these gentlemen.
Now, so with all that in mind, what are we playing here? The game itself is a runner, a infinite runner game, and the goal is you are Oscar, a small child who was trying to catch cattle thief because something was coming and stealing things from the farm, animals from the farm. So you put on your big boy pants and you hide in a box and you are going to jump out and confront these thieves. And your mom is actually trying to get you to come back in the house. She thinks you're just playing around. You know, there's nothing going on. Animals wander off sometimes, whatever. And all of this is explained in an incredible comic book style panel for panel storyboard.
Very stylized.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. It's amazing. So you are hiding in this box, and then it happens. The thieves are there, but instead of being like normal cattle rustlers or whatever, it's aliens. And they have their spaceship, and they beam you up, and they beam up some of your livestock, and they fly away with you. So the whole premise of the game is a runner. You are running on this alien planet trying to recover your livestock so you can come back home. And the game always has you moving forward. You're always progressing through the levels. Now, you can still independently move left and right, which will make you run faster or slower. You can jump and you can slide. And you are affected by momentum. So if you are pushing forward and you run a little bit before you jump, you will jump farther. But if you're pulling back and you're trying to, you know, slow down, you won't jump as far and you won't slide as far. Pretty standard stuff. Items along your run, you can get fruit. And what fruit does is helps fill up your energy bar. But it's not health. Don't confuse the two.
It reminded me of like rings in Sonic.
It is. It's sort of like rings in Sonic, except once you get hit, you can't recollect them.
Yeah.
But what the fruit does allow you to get hit as long as you have at least one bit of energy in your energy bar. But what it is actually doing is fueling your speed meter. So you can hit the action button and you'll burst into a burst of speed and he'll put his head down. He'll just burrow through everything. You'll run through enemies. That's how you hit in bosses, or one of the ways you can hit in bosses is using it just to power through things. The terrain is very otherworldly. Mm. You've got all these beautiful blues and purples and pinks in different shades, rolling hilltops. You've got platforms to jump on. You've got tons of different enemy types, like mutated chickens to avoid, landmines, ponds of acidic water, and it's all about getting to the end, kind of, Because here's the twist. You are actually racing an alien that you have to get to your farm animals before the alien does. And if you catch up to him, you could actually beat him up and take his spaceship and fly to the end of the stage.
The first time I thought
that was incredibly clever.
The first time I did that, I was so full of glee and joy that I could do that. I was like, yes, that's awesome. That was a great touch. I love that.
So everything, all the stages are planned out in advance. It would have been neat to see some random levels, but the game is short, which is absolutely by far my biggest complaint. It only has three stages, and while the stages progress in difficulty nicely, and they introduce new elements each level as you go, and new color palettes. The first one is all your purples, and then your second one is these nice shades of blue. So, and the music and stuff is good. I don't think, some people thought it was, you know, groundbreaking. I didn't think it was that incredible, but it was good. It wasn't distracting. The sound effects, same thing. I had a lot of fun with this, Aaron. I had a lot of fun with it. I played it until I beat it, which... granted, didn't take forever. It wasn't tremendously hard. But this is my type of game. This is a good get in, play it for a while, get out. I think the whole game, if you don't die at all, is about 15 minutes. But you're going to die. And it doesn't just game over you. If you die, you actually just go back to a checkpoint of the level. And you try again. So you could, if as long as you're tenacious, you're going to get through the game eventually.
Well, but, I like that.
I think the game was a lot of fun. I don't think they did anything mind-blowing from a gameplay perspective. But the scrolling on this, on a base Amstrad, incredible. I'm not a huge Amstrad guy, so I can't be as thoroughly as impressed, you know, because I don't have a lot to judge it off of, but the scrolling aspect of this game, I do understand that that was a limitation of the Amstrad. This kind of scrolling is not something that you see in a lot of games. So the amount of speed, especially when you put your head down and you're really running, is really incredible. What'd you think of it, Aaron?
You know, I'm not an Amstrad guy just because I haven't got to play as much Amstrad as I'd like, but let me tell you something. I've got more and more respect for the machine and its abilities with these newer games. This is just another example of taking a machine like the Amstrad that got so many crummy ports from the Spectrum and for the C64, and just putting something on here and saying, here we go. And the fact that this had limitations set on it, like you talked about, is even more stunning to me.
Yeah.
Because this one is a delight. The opening is great. The way it's laid out in comic book style is great. It's actually sort of almost touching in a way. And especially when his mom's calling for him and he's not even on the earth.
Yeah. So like, he's gone.
I managed to get only to the second level. I didn't make it to the final level like you did. But I played this on stream Friday night and just had a blast with it. People were blown away because this is a beautiful, colorful game that scrolls, in a, like you said, very smoothly and has a lot of character, a lot of heart. I know these types of games are around. It's not the type of game that I've played that often, you know, the running thing. But I found it fun. It's funny, I talked to a lot of the fellas. What it reminded me of, in a weird way, is Moon Patrol. There's a lot of jumping over stuff. I mean, so especially there's a level where you have to jump a bunch of mines. I thought to myself, holy smokes, what does this remind me of? It was Moon Patrol. And that's a good thing, brother. That's not a bad thing, because Moon Patrol is one of my favorite games. There's just a lot of great touches in this. Listen, you didn't sound like you were that impressed with the music. The music impressed the heck out of me.
No, I didn't say that. I thought it was good, not great.
I think it's real good. I mean, you've got to consider this is not what I would call, everyone heralds the C64's music. You expect the real good stuff when they're, but the Amstrad, I didn't expect this sort of quality work.
And maybe that's part of it. I mean, I will fully admit, I am not well versed in this in the Amstrad systems. So maybe this for the Amstrad, this is way off the charts, and I just can't appreciate that. I fully admit that.
It's fun to run and jump and slide around. I started playing this on with my gamepad, and the gamepad didn't feed the bulldog on this one, Brett. And I ended up going to the keyboard,
yeah,
and quite accidentally. And that was I had much better luck with the keyboard than I did joystick. Your mileage may vary depending on what you use, just a fun game. Yes, it may not be very long, but I mean it's for also by the way free, like you mentioned. It's a free good game for a system that probably could have some more better games than it did. And plus, this is one of those proof of concept games, a lot like Pinball Dreams we talked about, where you can look at it and say, hey, why didn't we get this back in the 80s? You know, well, that's because people were lazy. The guys who put this together knew what they were doing, clearly, especially to make something this small. Do you recall, did you read how this did in the contest, Brent?
First place.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Out of 49 entries, this won.
Yeah. I was going to say, if it didn't win, I got to see the other entries.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is a great game. This could have easily been a paid for release. Now, does it have
if it was longer?
Right. Does this have the depth or story or anything of say the Shadow Over Hawksmill? No. But and I'm not saying this is a better game than that. They're two different complete games, but I did enjoy this one more because this is more my realm of gaming. You know, the action, total action. Gaming, and plus the fact I've got a soft spot for the Amstrad because of seeing what it's capable of. So every time I see a game that exceeds my expectation for it, really is delightful to me. I really enjoyed this one. A great choice. Did someone suggest this to you? Is that how this went?
No, I was suggested a lot of games. In fact, give me just a moment. Entertain the people for a moment, Aaron.
I will tell around. People. I don't have to. I can spout the facts. I played both these games on my Mister, and they played great. I love the Mister. It's like they made the Mister for us to host this show with, because it made my life so much easier to play these games on there. This game is readily available from the maker's website. If you just look it up, you'll be able to find it. And you can load it right in. It's funny, I've had to learn how to load stuff on the Mister that in real systems. So I had to like actually load stuff just like you would on the Amstrad.
I had to look that stuff up too. Now, Aaron, I found this game because one of our incredible supporters, Dave Velociraptor, was pushing me to play Orion Prime.
All right.
And he said, you know, great game, came out 2009, you know, it's for the CPCs. Yeah. And I told him, I said, you know what, even if I don't pick that, I'm at least going to bring it up, because he was very passionate about it. And it does look like a nice game, but it looks too deep for what we're going to do for the show. So I kind of backed off that, but I said, you know what? I'm still going to pick a CPC game so I can really dig into the Amstrad more. Because, like I've said, not well-versed in the Amstrad, but I would like to be more so.
Yeah.
So, if you're out there and you're looking for... You play The Abduction of Oscar Z, and you're looking for some more CPC goodness, go check out Orion Prime. See if it's going to be what you want to play, and give it a peek too, because I've been told on good authority that it's an incredible game.
Very good, very good. So overall, I really enjoyed playing these modern 8-bit titles, Brent. We may have to bring this one back at some point. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I saw so many other ones that I would like to play. So I could see why. I could see it's good to see that the new stuff is coming out, and it's good stuff. You know, it fills one with a certain sense of delight to see that these machines are still being catered to after all these years. Now, normally I would say something incredibly clever here, and we would go directly to the wheel.
Nope.
But I just wanted to say that Brent came through. Hold on a second here. Look at this, everyone. holding up, for you in Radio Land, I'm holding up a panel of new pie pieces. Look at this. As I mentioned in the pre-show, these are the Glengarry pieces. These are the big-time pieces here. We've been waiting. And we have stocked the wheel with a couple new ones this week. Are you ready to go, Brent? You ready to try some of these things out? Let's do it.
Let's shout out what you added and give it a spin.
All right. So this week, we had to add several because of some faux pas from previous weeks. So we've got, these were all suggestions. We've added illegally published games. This was a suggestion by our good buddy Super Tech Boy. And we also added different port, same system. Pajaco 6502 suggested that. And a retro rewind piece this week, Brent. I believe it's a machine near and dear to your heart. It's the Epoch Super Cassette Vision, Brent. We're going to go with that one. We had a lot of fun with that before. All right, are we ready?
Yeah, give her a spin.
Let's get it lined up here. Funny how hard it is to line these up with the camera. All right, here we go. And what do we get? All right, we've got illegally published games. I guess legally published would have been pretty lame, wouldn't it?
New piece right off the bat.
That's right. We got it. Illegally published games. This was a suggestion from Super Tech Boy. Thank you, Super Tech Boy. Bam. There it is.
Now,
next week we'll be looking at illegally
published games.
For those
that don't quite understand, we're not talking about just pirating games, right? These are real publishers that went against the norm, against the way things were supposed to be.
Bypassed copy chips, or chip protection, stuff like that, right?
Correct. And I think, Aaron, if the game we picked has to have been controversial enough for the publisher to have been sued for it.
Oh, God, that's too much. Too much. We'll have to figure something out about that.
That's what I'm picking. How's that?
Yeah, well, yeah, don't lasso me into your weird zone there, pal. So, next week, illegally published games. Now, a few bits of house cleaning before we go. We have coming up, Brent, in just over a month. You know what's coming. It will be BAM Amigathon 2021. It will be a happening. We'll all be there. Me, Boat Brick, Cast of Thousands, Amiga Bill, Dan, Ravi, Kim Justice, Tin Mark, many more will be showing up for this bad boy. That is July 24th, 2021. It would be dandy if you could stop by. We'll be playing games for 12 straight hours, Brent, and being joined by the luminaries of the retro gaming field. And then after those 12 hours are up, we're going to be handing off to several other prominent streamers who are going to keep the ball rolling. In fact, the first guy that's we're passing the baton to is going to be our own personal pal, good buddy, Rob Flack O'Hara is going to take a turn. He'll right after us, and then he'll hand the baton off. We've got several people lined up past him to keep the ball rolling, keep the fun going all night long. It should be a good time. We hope you can turn out. This is our yearly fundraiser to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network. All the money, 100% of the money, goes directly to the Children's Miracle Network. We don't touch it. We never see a dime. We don't want to touch it. Don't get involved in that. That's what we use. We use their specifically set up website. You can already give money, Brent. Why wait? In the immortal words of Mean Gene, don't wait until the 11th hour. Give today.
Don't even wait till the first hour.
That's
give
right.
Now.
Go to amigathon.com, and you will see the donate button there, the big green donate, or purple, I believe, donate button. Click the button. Throw in a few bucks for the kids. This one's for the children, Brent. Won't you please save the children? There's already over $1,100 have been donated, Brent. Already. That's pretty tight.
Incredible.
Right out of the gate. I want to thank Frank from Retro Rewind for money matching for the first $500. So Frank helped us get there, and we had a bunch of other fine folks who chipped in to get us over $1,000 already. Anything you can add will help. If you aren't in a position to donate, don't feel bad. We'd still love you to join us, because listen, we've been there, brother. I know
spread
how it
the word.
Times are tough. Yeah, just spread the word, man. I don't want any guilty feelings. It is what it is. Just showing up is a nice supportive act. Brent, do you have anything you want to chat about before we hit the road here?
No.
All right, I guess fair enough.
New supporter video.
Yes.
Start right now. And if you want to see more videos and want to help us out, you can always join our Patreon as cheap as a buck or give as much as you want. We love our supporters. They really help us get through the day and make the show better or, you know, despite us.
Yeah, we appreciate any support. Very nice of you guys to kick in for the old show. We're very fortunate. And thankfully, it finally happened, Brent. We've updated that video. We'll see how long I can run this one before putting the big, ugly watermark behind it. Fingers crossed. So, Brent, next week, illegally published games. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll catch you guys on the flip side. Until then, take care.
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Hello to our YouTube subscribers and our Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and Bartbit for an amazing closing theme. Want to help keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at our new Patreon at patreon.com/ARGpresents. Just like these fine folks. Ram, W. Vetke, Rolo, Olaf Hope, Anthony Jarvis, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Norris, Frodo NL, Steve Rathmussen, Bernhard Lucas, Chris Fold, Mitsuyama, Jason Warnes, Rob Black O'Hara, Andy Craig, Dave Velociraptor, Retro Algae, Hermsky, John Dykeman, Jerry Dennington, Z9K9, and Mr. B. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify or Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Email it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We film live every Sunday, 10 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.